Hello, everyone. Welcome to NYJ Ground Crew. This is momentous. This is the first episode. This is the kickoff. Thank you so much for joining us. I am A.M. Pfeffer, your host and crew chief. And joining me, as always, from somewhere in the Jets universe is Johnny Jets.
Hello, Jets universe.
Johnny, as always, you've got something cool behind you. You've got something to bring to the table. Today, I see a pretty interesting picture, half baseball, half football. What are we looking at here?
That is a picture of a venerable Shea Stadium configured for New York Jets football while the New York Mets are still playing. As you may know, for most of the Jets' time at Shea Stadium, the Jets were not allowed to have any home games at Shea until the Mets season is over. That changed in about 72 or 73, and finally the Jets were able to play some games at Shea while the Mets were still playing, hence the baseball field in view.
I appreciate you bringing up a little nostalgia today. And look, I mean, you always bring a little something to the table. So today I brought you a little surprise myself. This is, you know, you're always wearing some good Jets garb. This is my daughter's first piece of Jets paraphernalia. I'm holding it up, obviously. She's grown out of it. She's 13 months now. But for the first, like, 3 to 6 months, I had her in this as much as possible in those stroller walks around the neighborhood. I just wanted you and everyone to know that's how important it was. And I'm bringing it here as a good luck charm because this is our kickoff episode. And because it's our kickoff episode, before we even begin, and we did it purposefully on the bye week, obviously, why we started this, but we got to bring us up to snuff. Where are we now with the Jets? We know we're 6-3, but how do we get here? Johnny, bring us home, man. What? Give us a little summary, if you will, of how we ended up 6-3 and why we should all be so damn excited about it.
Well, you're absolutely right, AM. Jets at 6-3, break up the Jets. Who could have seen this? I certainly didn't see it coming. Most of Jets universe did not see it coming. 6-3 at the bye week with an opportunity to play at New England next week with a victory to go into sole possession of first place of the AFC East. That's something that maybe in the post-Super Bowl championship press conferences that owners Woody and Christopher Johnson, General Manager Joe Douglas, and Head Coach Robert Saleh can address as to what happened when they were playing inconsistently at the beginning of the 2022 season. To the point now where they actually have one of the top, if not the top defense in football. And they've managed to coach their quarterback to manage the football team and eliminate mistakes. I know that you've talked a lot about that Zach Wilson is the future of this franchise. And, you know, your thoughts on his development, Zach Wilson.
Yeah, well, we're going to get to him, and I want to talk to him in a little bit, but I think we got to start with a couple of other. First of all, I love what you said about, you know, the Johnsons being up there on the podium at the end of the season, telling us how it happened. You manifested it might just come to be. Let's hope so. But you also mentioned one of the guy who obviously deserves most of the credit because, he was out there much maligned talking about taking receipts, and here he is at 6-3. And everybody loves to be on his side of the fence on that meme, on that joke. But Robert Saleh has done a tremendous job. And I think it's even bigger than what a lot of people think. And I want to start with this. There has been, especially in the Jets organization, dating back to Bill Parcells, a rookie bounce for head coaches. It's undeniable. And we're going to go through them. But Saleh, we know, didn't have that. Just call it like it is. Last year, the man was 4-13. That there is no rookie bounce with that. So the fact that he's now 6-3 on the other side of this, pretty tremendous. But, you know, it happens a lot around the NFL and specifically in the Jets organization. Let's work backwards for a second. Actually, I want to skip over the predecessor because I'm not sure he's worth talking about. Adam Gase, we all know. We all know how fast we all realized we kind of wanted to move off from him. But even he, in his rookie season, was not the 2-15 that he ended with. He was 7-9, which, again, wasn't great, but not as terrible. But jumping back right before him.
Right, but to be fair, he did start 1-6 and lost to the winless Dolphins to go 1-7 that year. He did bounce back in the second half of the season, much to everyone's shock and dumbfoundedness.
Yeah, right. It's such a great point. And not only that, but then the other half of this, besides the rookie bounce, everybody loves to talk about is, oh, now you have momentum, which we all know is no such thing in the NFL, right? You don't end the season with momentum thinking you're going to bring it 7 months later. And I think we were proof of that in that second year. But, you know, Gase notwithstanding, Todd Bowles, when he started, and he was here for quite some time, 10-6 is in his first year. And we all know what happened. Why don't you help us relive that last game of that rookie season when we did not make the playoffs?
Other than the mud ball and the Dennis Byrd injury, week 17 at Buffalo, January of 2017, the end of the 2016 season, maybe one of the worst moments in Jets history. All the Jets had to do was beat a Rex Parcells coached Buffalo Bills team that was already eliminated from the playoffs. And because Todd Bowles did not want to embarrass Darrelle Revis, it appreciated Darrelle Revis at that point. He had Darrelle Revis giving Sammy Watkins a 10 or 15 yard cushion all day, whether it was third and 12, third and 15, third and 25, fourth and 38. The Bills just moved the ball down the field all day. Everyone rightfully remembers Fitzpatrick's interception at the end of the game. But the reason that the Bills were able to put the points on the board is because Todd Bowles did not want to embarrass Darrelle Revis. And I thought that Todd Bowles should have been fired as the head coach of the New York Jets that day. I don't think he should have gotten on the bus. They should have left him in Buffalo. But, of course, he coached for another 3 years, going 14 and 34 his last 3 years as Jets head coach.
Exactly. I think 2 4-win seasons and 1 5-win season. And you mentioned Rex Parcells, but obviously we know it was Rex Ryan. And speaking of, he was the coach before, also a great rookie season, the rookie bounce. You remember his record his rookie season?
He went 10-6.
9-7.
He went 10-6.
9-7. Our boy Rex was 9-7. He was 11-5 the second season, but 9-7 with Sanchez at the helm. But they did make the playoffs as
that's we know, right.
Of course, right? But you know, look, something interesting during his season, they really acquired incredible free agents. You don't always hit on that, as we know, but when we brought in guys like Damien and Barkscott and Calvin Pace in those first few years for Rex, it was pretty incredible. And that helped it along. And he did have a rookie quarterback at the time, although they did a good job keeping the tether on Sanchez and keeping him as a game manager at least that first year. But, you know, again, 9-7, rookie bounce. But really the two guys before them, I mean, it speaks to it more than anything else. Obviously, I'm sure you remember who was before Rex.
Before Rex was the greatest head coach in the history of the University of Virginia. That would be Al Groh, and he did go 10-6.
Eric Mangini. We're not quite at Al Groh.
Nope.
and we got someone before him too. I think you're excited to skip ahead, and I get that. But Mangini specifically, and I remember him very clearly because a lot of people did not necessarily believe in him. I mean, he was from the Belichick coaching tree, but there was a lot of questions about why we hired him at the time. But he was 10-6, and before him, a coach who was here for quite some time, the great Herm Edwards, of course, also 10-6 his rookie season. And then to your point, the best of the best at the University of Virginia. Our hearts go out to them. This was a horrific week, but Al Groh, 9-7. And we, you know, I'm sure you can regale us with tales if we had enough time, but his last three games, all losses, and we missed the playoffs that year as well. Herm had a pretty, you know, a couple of decent years in between them, but again, really that rookie season. So to me, bringing this back to Salah, this is even more impressive what he's done, because he was left with a very strange, barren cupboard. You know, Douglas was really rebuilding, had to do a lot more. It was before he brought in the great free agent class, obviously this year, and certainly one of the best draft class, I think, inarguably, anybody's seen in a long time around this league. But to be 4-13 as he was, to start out the way he did those first three games last year, just complete ineptitude on offense. It was almost insane to go back and look at the annals of the NFL, how bad we were. And started out okay defensively and then flipped the switch, and then it just all went downhill from there. How terrible the stretch was for the next 4 or 5 games defensively. It was just uncanny how bad it was. And then, of course, we know just the struggle at the end of last year, you know, getting Zach back on the field and some good games and some bad games. I mean, an excruciating loss to the Buccaneers, even though it was one of Zach's better games, that kind of thing. But Salah is here. Salah said, hey, these are the guys I want to bring in this year. JD, help me out. And this is how I want to build this team. You know, I run the wide nine. I run the cover three. Get me those cornerbacks that matter. Get me, you know, I don't care on the 53-man roster if we're missing that extra linebacker or, you know, missing, you know, one other guy who could be necessarily an offensive lineman, but just get me pass rushers. And he's been proven right so far. What do you think?
I think you're absolutely right, AM. I know during the leading up to the draft, you and I had discussions about who the Jets should take with their number 4 overall pick. I was convinced they needed to take one of the top 2 tackles, whether it's Neil or Aquano, because I felt that that Zach Wilson just he needed people up front. I did not think Mekhi Becton was going to be on the field at all in 2022. That's no great guess on my part. But they went with Sauce Gardner, and so far Sauce Gardner's play has justified Joe Douglas taking him at the number 4 overall pick. I think that you and I are in agreement that at number 10 they needed to take a wideout, which they did. Salah's definitely gotten the defense to play hard these last several games, and the results are on the scoreboard.
Well, I'm so glad you brought up Sauce. Obviously we can go through all the rest of the draft picks. We don't need to. They've been done ad nauseum around the league. But the conversation about Sauce as well has been as well. But he really bears a larger conversation because, you know, this term lost in the sauce that's become part of the zeitgeist, I think, you know, made popular by the great Gucci Mane, and now, you know, applies to Lost in the Sauce, and you know, good on whoever brought it to the forefront and gave that. I mean, Rebus Island was something special. I think we all enjoyed that. But this notion of Lost in the Sauce, and I got to tell you, it ain't just defenders out there lost in the sauce. Personally, as a fan, I'm lost in the sauce. I'm having an out of body experience watching this guy every week in, week out. I can't wait to see what he's about to do on the field. And every time the ball gets thrown in his direction, I feel like I'm, you know, jumping through the TV to help him and be a part of it. I mean, that's how good he is. What do you think? I mean, when you watch him, are you having a similar experience, or you're just like, wow, we've got another great defender here?
Well, I think you have every reason, AM, to feel and react it the way that you do. He is a special talent, and he has demonstrated not just that he has ability, but also he has a high football IQ, that he's coachable, and that he plays hard and he plays to win. You know, as a long-suffering Jets fan, I can't take complete confidence or satisfaction that he will play like that every single week, even though there's no objective to reason that he wouldn't or shouldn't. I just believe that, you know, I've been down this road before, whether it's through injury or other sign of other kind of setback. But right now they've got a player that is quite possibly the best player at his position in the National Football League, which you stated many times.
Yeah, and you know, that's really what's so impressive here. There are 8 games to go, obviously, and we're going to see how he finishes this season. But through the first 9, this is Pantheon rookie stuff. You know, you just don't see this. Offensively, on that side of the ball, you get a little bit more from some of these guys coming out and having an immediate impact, right? I mean, you could think about Ja'Marr Chase last year, Justin Jefferson, you know, running backs. The names go on the offensive. I mean, they're touching the ball a number of times, key positions in that part. But to be a defensive player, there are so few guys who have made an impact like this. And interestingly enough, there was one guy last year in Micah Parsons. He's incredible. And I don't want to take away Patrick Surtain, obviously. He's really fantastic over in Denver. But no, I mean, even the Broncos fans, I think the smart ones would admit that he just wasn't or still isn't doing what Sauce is doing this year, affecting the games. I mean, Sauce, you know, when he took Bridgewater out on the first play of that Miami game with that safety, and he's had passes defended at the end of games multiple times to win the games. I mean, that is ridiculous. Ridiculous for a lot of quarterbacks, just insane for a rookie. But I'm thinking about guys like, you know, Alden Smith or Luke Kuechly or Javon Curse. I mean, you're going back a while to think about like Pantheon rookie season guys. Sauce is having this. Sauce is really up there. I mean, those are the names we're talking about. If he can finish these 8 games with a couple more complete, you know, just absolutely out of his mind passes defended, you know, ending up number 1 in man coverage for a cornerback. I mean, the ability to tilt the field the way he does, to be on that side of the ball and give Salah and Albrecht every, you know, bit of confidence that they can do so many other things defensively. It's to your point why they really are a top 3 defense, if not the number 1 in the league. I mean, and it all starts with Ahmad Sauce Gardner. Would you agree?
I would agree, and it almost makes you forget that the Jets once drafted Quinton Coppels in the first round. It's an exciting time to watch Sauce Gardner to be lost in the sauce, and certainly it's the Jets defense that is carrying this team so far and has the opportunity to carry them potentially with a win at New England into first place this coming Sunday.
Quinton Coppels, another great first round, you know, bust. But hey, you know, it's interesting we're talking about because Pantheon rookie seasons, you know, you got to throw Lawrence Taylor up there. And obviously, you know, out of North Carolina, what an amazing career obviously he had. And maybe we were hoping the same for Quinton Coppels. Didn't happen. All right, let's move on now. We're going to go to everyone's favorite subject, everyone's favorite guy, our general, your general, my general, whether we like it or not, the young but very talented Zach Wilson. Now, of course, a lot's been made of him. I mean, conversations, you know, just pounded into the ground about this guy. But we got to start with one place, you know, just how we all feel about him. There's the eye test, there's the numbers and all of this, but there's you, there's me, and, well, again, there's you, a long-suffering Jets fan. Is he our guy? Do you think he's the future?
Well, I think after this game last week against Buffalo, he definitely might be the quarterback of the future. Whether he is or not, time will tell, and I think this Sunday at New England is going to tell a lot to that point. So far, his Jets career has been, you know, uneven at best. There's been moments where he's looked the part, making every play. That game against at Pittsburgh this season is a prime example of that, leading a fourth quarter victory. But there have been other moments in his Jets career where he's thrown screen passes into the ground, where he's thrown passes to the other team's players, and most notably where he's just running around getting happy feet and taking losses and sacks. So can Zach Wilson be the future of this franchise? Yes, he can. Has he demonstrated that he might be? Yes, he can. If he doesn't make mistakes against New England this Sunday and wins that game for the Jets, is he almost certainly the face of the franchise in the opinion of a long-suffering Jets fan? I would say yes, he is. You've spoken so much about his innate abilities and also the leadership skills and the development that he's shown in his, I guess, 19 games at this point. So let's hear more about that.
Yeah, well, listen, I love the kid's story. There's no question about that, from, you know, where he started to where he is now and how he got to be, you know, the number two pick and the franchise quarterback of the New York Jets, you know, the biggest media market in the NFL, and brought him here. But you just brought up something that really strikes at me, you know, and this is a big thing of it. Yeah, we know he runs backwards. Yeah, we know when he bails out of the pocket, he holds the ball too long. But specifically about a lot of short balls into the dirt, this has always been a weird kind of thing for him. And if anybody's been paying attention, sometimes it almost feels like, you know, when the catcher can throw out beautifully someone on the rundown at second base, but can't just throw the ball back to the pitcher, you know? and in this previous game against Buffalo, I think I counted for at least five times where he threw a sidearm ball. Now, everyone's excited about that because he's the only other guy in the league besides Mahomes who seems to have this ability to do something like that. And I think on two of the passes, it was merited and it went for positive yardage and good on him. But it feels like, or it felt like, two or three of those balls didn't necessarily need to be sidearm, but he threw them and threw them with success. Do you think that's kind of part of the game plan for him now? I don't want people to forget this because it was only just a few short weeks ago in Buffalo that he did this. Do you think that maybe the coaches were like, hey, you're kind of missing some of these short passes. Why don't you try the sidearm if that's where you're more comfortable with? What do you think?
And that's an excellent observation on your part, AM. Yeah, I mean, if the Jets coaching staff feels that he's just not capable of making a short, simple throw in a conventional manner, but he's eminently capable of doing it by throwing sidearm, throw it sidearm. You know, whatever the reasoning behind it, definitely was successful against Buffalo. And if that's something that eliminate mistakes on the quarterback's part, then I'm all for it. You know, what are you looking for him as far as the short game moving forward?
Yeah, well, I mean, just making those completions and don't throw it too hard, especially, you know, if you're 5 yards or less. And that's always kind of been a big knock on him. I mean, I'm thinking about one particular play where he threw it to Uzama on the left side and it was a nice gain and it was a sidearm play and he did not need to throw it sidearm. So yeah, if that works, go right ahead. But moving on to something else about him, I want to pick up on an article that came out right after the game over at Jets X Factor. They do an incredible job over there. No affiliation we have with them. So, you know, me giving a little credit here is just being a big fan myself of what they do over there. Michael Nani in particular wrote an amazing article on what Zach's strengths are. And specifically, if he can stay in the pocket, doesn't get those happy feet we're talking about, and gets the ball out quickly, we're talking under 2.5 seconds, his numbers are kind of surprising, I think would surprise a lot of people in the league. Now, this article, a little over a week old at this point, so because games have been played, different numbers across the board. But I want to break down four categories here that he did. Again, this is Michael Nania over at Jets X Factor, put together a really good article. And it showed what Zach's numbers are and where he compares to 32 other quarterbacks in the league, the starting quarterbacks. He is, and again, this is him staying in the pocket, releasing the ball in under 2.5 seconds. He's sixth in yards per attempt. He's fourth in completion percentage. He's eighth in EPA per play and fourth in success rate. Those are pretty high numbers. Those are all top 10 numbers and some of those top five. for the young quarterback if he can stay in there and do that. And it does prove a point, that, you know, because the knock on that, the quick knock on that is, well, if he's doing that, then he's read, then it's his first read. And that's also something you hear about him. He's too quick to just throw it for his first read. But such a weird, you know, thing to knock him for, because, okay, if his first read is open and we do have the receivers who can do this, throw the ball. And if you're throwing into a tight window of space and you're doing it well, well, then you deserve all that success. One of those categories jumps out at me in particular, and that is yards per attempt. Because oftentimes, and this goes back to the short arm stuff, you know, if you're doing that, if you're sitting in the pocket and you're just releasing the ball quickly, you don't giving you're not giving your receivers a tremendous amount of time to get downfield, or you're throwing these quick outs, you know, or throwing these balls to, you know, maybe the tailback. But sixth in yards per attempt doing that means that, well, within that 2.5 seconds, you know, he could sit in the pocket and he could get the ball to a Garrett Wilson a little further down the field. Your thoughts on his success, and is this a recipe for success moving forward if he's just doing that?
Well, I mean, there's no doubt that Zach Wilson does some things very well, and that he does some things which, you know, clearly put him at the top of the league of quarterbacks in doing them. I think the challenge with Zach Wilson is there are other areas where he can do one thing one time and lose the game single-handedly for the Jets. So I think it's less about, you know, identifying what Zach does well at this point. I don't think those things are shocking, and I don't think those things are in dispute. I think it's minimizing the things that that he has done to cost his team games and points and drives so far. You know, against Buffalo at the end of the game, you know, he's just almost exclusively handing the ball off, if not exclusively handing the ball off on the last drive. But the fact that he can throw the ball down the field, he's got the arm strength, you know, in isolation, yards per attempt. If his receiver is catching the ball, if it's his first read and he's throwing it down the field and the receiver's catching the ball and it's a good throw and he's not getting the receiver killed and the defender doesn't have a chance to catch it, you know, those are all good things. What are you looking for as far as the complete package from Zach Wilson moving forward this season?
Well, this is going to be an unpopular opinion. I'm glad you asked about that. But to me, you know, you say this season, to me, I don't think any of these guys, not a one, I don't care how good they are, even an Andrew Luck coming out, you know, or a Trevor Lawrence, I don't think they should see the field the first year. I really don't. I mean, it's too daunting for most of these guys, and they're not ready for the speed of the game. They're not ready for anything. I mean, even Mahomes got a year to sit. Rodgers, I think, was 4 behind Favre. But speaking of 4, that's where I look to, is year 4. And I know that is unpopular because, you know, you get these rookie contracts and you get the notion that the fan bases are starved and nobody wants to wait and we can do it with the game manager, and the rhetoric in the NFL is every third game to talk about the ups and downs of these guys. I mean, even, you know, Josh Allen is now taking flack because his past couple games are not great and all of this. Is he regressing and all of this? And it's so, you know, so much of it's overblown. And with Zach, I'm really not even looking until year 4, which, again, I think is unpopular. It's crazy to a lot of people because, well, how do you assess? You got to think about what, you know, you draft somebody else and just keep churning this through, or pick up, you know, a bridge quarterback, someone 30 years old, and pay him the money and this and that. And it's like, okay, fine. But to me, what I'm looking for him that I think is success is not doing things that any other quarterback in the league, you know, isn't doing either. And to me, that's running backwards. I mean, besides Kyler Murray playing backyard ball, which we know wasn't and isn't working for that team, and they are all below 500, don't ever run backwards. There is no cause for that, and you can't do that. And if you are bailing out of the pocket, you better make a quick decision. Jalen Hurts is so good about doing that. And if you're bringing it back over the cross of the, you know, back, you know, across the field a little bit, whether you're running right or left, it's kind of the same thing. Quick decision to either dirt the ball, throw it to one of that one open receiver you see, or get the ball out of bounds. Because, you know, a decision like he made in the New England game, where he, you know, in nearly 1,500 or maybe over 1,500 attempts over 2 years of quarterbacks trying to throw the ball out of bounds and just get it away, he's the one guy who actually got intercepted on the sideline. That's just crazy to me. And that can't happen. And those are the decisions we're talking about, because, you know, it's the maturity level of after the game. He was a little short with the media, and he just didn't quite take on the responsibility and the blame of that game. But the reality was, yeah, he did lose that game, because there were too many times when Nick Foles got to trot out on that field and kick those field goals. And Belichick's so good about that, accruing the points until you just lose, because he's got a similar, you know, they have a good defense on their side of the ball. Not quite as good as the Jets, obviously. But yeah, I mean, I don't want to just see him be a game manager. It's not going to work, in my opinion, if he goes there and just does quick passes, even if he's over 70%. You've got to go out there and still have some of those big plays and be able to do things. But, you know, one other thing with him that is really not talked about enough, and I don't think he gets enough credit, is when he runs forward, how good he is at doing that. Those two third downs he picked up with his legs were absolutely incredible. He did one in the Denver game that was tremendous, in my opinion. He's not given enough credit in the Miami game for the touchdown that he had, that he ran and got something like that. Not every quarterback can do that. And more specifically, and this was the big knock on him at the end of last year when he didn't have any interceptions, over the last part of the year, which is great for any quarterback, let alone a rookie. A big part of what he was doing was obviously running, and he had a lot of rushing touchdowns, and he had a lot of rushing yards, and put our guys in position so he didn't have to throw the ball and get the touchdown. But Michael Carter started accruing them himself at the end of last year, and a lot of people forget that. So when I think about Zach, there are a lot of good things. I want to point to the positives more than negatives. You know, that New England game to me was a big sum of all fears game. It was everything none of us wanted to see, but he did bounce back. He did do what needed to be done in the Buffalo game. It was a sign of maturity. And yeah, you know, it's going to come. It's going to come for him where he is, you know, going to be able to hold the ball a little bit longer and to go down the field. But again, I'm not looking necessarily until year four for something like that. I think we may have lost Johnny, so I'm just going to continue without him for now until he pops back up on the screen. And I wanted to get to another part of what we were discussing and what we were going to talk about, the road to the playoffs. So this is big because, hey, we're all Jets fans, right? And as Jets fans, we never really get a chance to think about what the playoffs are for unless it's another team. But here we are at 6-3, and it is absolutely time to start thinking playoffs and believing that we're going to make it. And not only believing we're going to make it, but not necessarily as a wild card, but perhaps we can actually win this thing as the AFC East champions. Yep, I'm saying it. I'm throwing it out there. I think a lot of people are too, and it's worth discussing because right now we know seven teams make it on the AFC and the NFC, but all four teams, if you look at the playoffs right now, would be in today in the AFC East. That's pretty awesome. And the Jets are a half game behind Miami, even though we've beaten them, only because they haven't quite had their bye week yet, although it's this week, and we'll see what happens there. As long as we can beat New England, well, we'd be ahead of them. But it is huge that we have beaten Miami already and beaten Buffalo already, and we're 4-0 on the road with a very good chance on beating New England later this week, and we'll see what happens. All right, Johnny is back. Let's see if he can jump back in. Johnny, are you there? Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. That was an emergency Mark Sanchez hot dog break, but I'm back now.
I hope you put a little mustard and kraut on that, and you're satiated, and you're back with us. I just moved on and kind of finished up what I was saying about Zach and was talking about the playoffs. So let's just jump in with me. I've talked about the AFC East teams and how all four are in, but I want to talk about who we're really up against. I mean, I don't want to think about wild card. I want to think about winning the division. I hope you do too. But let's think about like really what the playoff picture, because it is worthwhile to think about, you know, being in the playoffs. We get this chance, and I think we can do it. But look, the Chiefs, the Ravens, and let's just call it like it is, the Titans are in. That's three spots that are taken up right there, right? Now you've got the Dolphins, who we're up against, we've beaten once. Now you've got the Bills, who are obviously up against, who we have beaten once, in New England, who we've lost to. But we're 4-0 on the road, and we head to their stadium looking for a little payback this week. It'd be a huge game. This is even bigger than the last one. I mean, by far, we know that. But who are the other teams that we really have to worry about? The Chargers, who just lost to the San Francisco 49ers of the night. We love that. They're 5-4, and I don't trust their coaching staff. And, you know, if Keenan and Mike Williams can't stay on the field, they can't even throw the ball down the field. Herbert is incredible, but he's not being given the chance to do what he's actually good at. I would bring up Indianapolis because, you know, Jeff Saturday, you know, the much maligned Jeff Saturday, who everybody made fun of, the Colts having brought in and all of that, he actually won his game, although that was against the lowly Raiders. We'll see what happens moving forward. You talk about the rookie bounce. That's often the case when you bring the change in. You know, they win that first game, but we'll see towards the end of the year. I'm not too concerned about them, but the AFC South is so weak. Obviously, the Broncos, but nah, I'm not really worried about them. The Browns we've already beat, and they just had a very bad loss. Really, who you're looking at is, of course, the Bengals. That's really our biggest foe at this point. And unfortunately, we lost to them at the beginning of the year. But like I said, that's the mentality. That's loser mentality of wild card thinking. How do we get to where we need to be winning this division?
Well, it starts with this Sunday at New England. If the Jets win the game at New England this Sunday, then the Jets have sole possession of first place. It follows that if they continue to win, that they will remain in first place throughout the rest of the year. That makes the final game week 18 at Miami, you know, probably for all the marbles in terms of that. But yeah, the Jets cannot be thinking of just settling for the wild card at this point. They need to be thinking about winning the division and playing to win the division. Winning the division, obviously, to state the obvious, guarantees making the playoffs. It guarantees a home playoff game. So they've set themselves up at this point where winning the division is in reach. It starts this Sunday at New England. And if the Jets show up and win that game, then they put themselves in great shape to do so.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, obviously, if they become 7-3 and then they're really leading the division, that would just be incredible. But yeah, I mean, you're going to have that extra win over New England. So you'd split it with them 1-1. And there's a very good chance that at the end of the season, you can go into Miami and win that game. I mean, you have the defense, you have the cover three to be able to do it, you know, and it'll just be a very different tale to tape when we go there than what we did against Buffalo a few years back when Fitzpatrick was at the helm and lost. But, you know, we'll see. I mean, you said Bowles shouldn't have gotten on the bus at that time. I would still think Salah deserves to get on his bus, even if we don't win that game. But again, we're a long way off that. Who knows? We can go on another streak of winning 4 or 5 in a row. It wouldn't surprise me. We've got the Bears in there. We've got, you know, at the Bills again, we've got the Jaguars in there. We've got the Seahawks. You know, I think the Seahawks are flying a little higher than they should, and they know it. Although all the credit in the world to Geno and to Carroll, who's done a wonderful job, good coaching staff over there. Again, I don't want to get too off reservation, but it's interesting and it's worth thinking about. And we should all be very, very excited because it is a strong possibility the Jets not only make the playoffs, but do win the division. And I think we should bang that drum. All right, time for just a couple of questions here. A few people sent a few things in before we started the show. I'm going to start with numero uno. Andrew Keats asks, are we going to beat New England and by how much? What do you think, Johnny?
If Zach Wilson does not make any mistakes, the Jets are going to beat the Patriots. If Zach Wilson makes any mistakes, then the Patriots are going to be the Jets. Either way, it's going to be a close game.
Yeah. Well, Belichick got the better of us once. I mean, can he do it a second time? Or is Salah, you know, as good as we've all made him out to be? Again, you know, and we talked a lot about that rookie bounce or how incredible it's been that he's overcome how bad his rookie season was to bring us to 6-3. But there's something else that he's doing very well this year and not being given enough credit for: situational football. Great clock management, great decision making, did it in the Pittsburgh game, did it in Miami game, and a few other games that they've won. They've really just done a nice job. And you talked about it this previous game, you know, just absolute chess match along the line so we can get into that fourth quarter and take the ball out of Zach's hands when it mattered the most. You know, Robinson and Carter, I think, had 75 yards on that last drive combined running because, you know, the defense was gassed. And our guys just were able to move it around, and LaFleur drew up some really good plays to be able to do something like that. So to your point, can Zach limit the mistakes? Which, you know, we'll see if he does. And even if he doesn't, can he go out and make some big plays that matter to win this? But, you know, let's say he does. Let's get a little optimistic here. Even for a long-suffering Jets fans like yourself, I'm going to keep up the optimism. What do you think the final score is? And again, this is only Tuesday, and we're going to obviously talk about the upcoming game on Friday, but Andrew asked this question. What do you think the final score is when we do win this Sunday?
Well, the previous game score, I believe, was 22-17. If you want to be optimistic, and I'll put my optimistic hat on for the moment, let's say that the Jets defense scores twice. So that would make it 36-17 Jets.
Man, I love it. I love that optimism. And hey, we all know what happened in the last game. We really did score that pick six, but we don't need to go back there as well. Okay, time for one last question here. O'Neal Solomon asks, who are the unsung heroes on the Jets this year? Ooh, I like that question. Your thoughts, Johnny. Who's number one for you?
Yeah, AM, we've talked about this a little bit. There's a couple of unsung heroes, but my vote is going to be with probably the most unsung of all the unsung heroes, and that would be number 11, Denzel Mims, in the doghouse, inactive for most of the season. He's made important plays in every game that he's been in so far. You know, whether it was block on the Breece Hall touchdown at Denver, whether it was making the catch on the final on the Jets drive against the Patriots, I'm sorry, against Buffalo, Denzel Mims has really shown up and played. And I think right now he's the unsung hero of this team.
I like it. And hey, you know, Mims is already talked about having a much bigger part of this offense moving forward, you know, regardless of Davis coming back or not. And obviously we got word already, his knee is still a little wonky and not quite sure if he's going to play this Sunday, but even if and when he does come back, Mims should still be a part of it. All right. For me, I'm going with all of special teams. I think not enough credit is being given to not only Braden Mann, not only our long snapper, but Greg the Leg, I think, has been tremendous for us this year. And the one he missed, you know, a couple weeks ago, you know, kind of partially blocked on that way. So I think he's really done an amazing job. And our gunners, you know, I mean, are out there and we're putting where we need to be. And I think Berrios is doing a pretty good job when he gets a chance in a little running room. So Boyer's doing a wonderful job with special teams. I mean, special teams wins games, especially when your defense is good, especially when the games are close. So not enough drum being beaten for those special teamers. I want to give them all the credit. All right, this has been episode 1 of NYJ Ground Crew. Self AM Pfeffer, host and crew chief. We're going to do it again Friday. Same time, same place, 1 p.m. Eastern time. NYJ Ground Crew signing off. Thank you, Johnny.
Thank you, Ian.
See you Friday.